Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Yeah! Time to get a lift.
A division of Bell Media. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk taking you right up until 12 noon today. We have a jam-packed show coming up in about 1 hour's time from the Winnipeg Free Press. He's their business reporter. Martin Cash is going to join us, talk a little bit about the business side, about the potential relocation of the NHL to Winnipeg. 10:30 this morning, very excited to have this guest on. He's a former Jack Adams Trophy winner. He was as a head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. He is Bob Murdoch. He's going to be joining us at 10:30, talk about some of his times in Winnipeg, and of course, we're going to talk about if he still has his iconic mustache or not.
That's all I really care about.
I know, that's truly. I mean, it's all about the mustache. So we're thrilled to have Bob Murdoch joining us at about 10:30.
Do you think he uses just for men?
For the mustache?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. I think that's an all-natural mustache.
Could be.
Anyways, coming up at 11 o'clock this morning, another former Winnipeg Jet, he gave one of the most iconic speeches. I think Churchillian is actually how I heard it described once. That's Eddie Olczyk. We all remember the speech. We're thrilled to welcome Eddie Olczyk back to the show. He's been on a few times. Eddie's going to join us at the top of the third hour. And then at the bottom of the third hour, 11:30 this morning, from the National Post, Michael Trakos is going to join us. You know, Michael wrote a couple great articles in the National Post this past week about the return of the NHL to Winnipeg, tying it into the IKEA development that's taking place. So, you know, we're going to be joined by Michael, talk about sort of the return of the NHL to Winnipeg from a Toronto perspective, which is where Michael is based. And, of course, in between the, you know, throughout the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup Finals because, well, the matchup is set. They're going to get underway on Wednesday, so we'll preview that, talk about last night's Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, your phone calls, your tweet, the email address, the Twitter page, here we go. The phone number, 780-1290, area code 204 if you're calling from out of town, to reach us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. So twitter.com/illegalcurve, Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and via email, drew@illegalcurve.com. And I'm already off. They're not brave enough to say anything on air, but they're giving me the gears already. My two compadres on this program, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to the show.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now, Ezzy.
How are you, Drew?
I'm doing well. How about you, Richard?
Sound like you have lots of energy this morning.
I was up nice and early. I got a good night's sleep. I feel rejuvenated. I feel refreshed. I feel like we're ready to bring some heat for 3 hours.
Yeah, Drew, I got an early night's sleep, too, and I don't really like it. I'm not really ready for this. You know, I'm turning 29 soon. I'm not really ready to go to bed at 9 o'clock yet, but I guess when you work 5 days a week, that's what it is. I spent 27 years not working 5 days a week, and now I'm working 5 days a week. It's good in a way, but you also, it's kind of weird. I kind of feel, you know, like I'm like my father or something now.
As in, my 90-year-old grandparents don't go to bed at 9 o'clock.
I know. It's weird. But, you know, you do feel refreshed when you wake up, you know, so.
Richie, how about you? What time did you go to bed last night?
I passed out after the hockey game, actually, on the couch, and I woke up on the couch.
So you had a good sleep, too?
Yeah, it was actually a very good game last night.
Yeah, let's talk about the game last night. Game 7, Boston-Tampa Bay.
Great game.
Yeah, it was an exciting, well-played game.
Let me take this opportunity right now to say that prior to the season, we were back on kick then, Drew made the prediction that it would be a Boston-Vancouver final.
Dun, dun,
and,
dun, dun,
and credit, give credit where credit's due. However, we should point out halfway through the playoffs, Drew decided to take the Philadelphia Flyers over those very same Boston Bruins in a series. So
he decided to parlay, Drew.
We will decide to forget
I hedged. I lost terrible, on the hedge.
Yeah, you hedged. And well, that was a terrible decision. But we'll decide to give you credit for the fact that you predicted the Stanley Cup final in September.
Yeah, yes. Congratulations. Way back in September. That's all that matters, that you saw something in the Bruins. You saw something in the Canucks, which a lot of people...
I see something in you, too, Ezzy. I see something big. Big things are going to come your way.
It's a fortune cookie right now.
Full compliments.
If you want to call me off air, I can give you the winning lottery numbers in tonight's 649 also. Let's talk about last night in Boston. Tremendous atmosphere, tremendous speed, I thought, in the game. from what I could see, Tampa Bay employed the very rare 0-0-5 defense. They just seemed like they sat back and let Boston take the play to them pretty much for the first 55 minutes of the game until it was too late for them to get the tying goal.
Yeah, Boston controlled the play for the most part. Yesterday, Boston deserved to win. Dwayne Rolison was great. He kept them in the game. But Boston, you know, to me, was a better team yesterday. And the series was very up and down. An exciting series, but not necessarily one, you know, I predicted Boston in seven. But I wasn't that necessarily that way. You know, the high-scoring games, Sagan going off, and then Thomas and Rolison being terrible at times. But it made for an exciting series. It made for an exciting storyline. I think for the NHL as a whole, Boston-Vancouver is a tremendous final. I think that you have two teams that are similar in ways, but also the fact that you have a huge market in the States that hasn't won the Cup since the early 70s, hasn't been to the Cup in 21 years since 1990 against the Edmonton Oilers. And then you have the Vancouver Canucks, who've never won a Stanley Cup before. They've been to the finals once, I believe, in 81 against the Islanders. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is two fan bases who've been wanting a winner for so long. You know, just sitting and waiting for a team to take it to the next level. You're going to have two huge fan bases, two cities that are waiting for something like this to happen, that have been waiting so long that it's just complete euphoria right now. You see by the celebrations of both teams by winning the conferences, Ezzy. I mean, these cities and the players were celebrating, I thought, kind of both, like they won the cup.
It seemed like the celebration did. If you compare and contrast the two celebrations between the Boston winner and the Vancouver winner, Vancouver just seemed a little bit more subdued.
Yes.
Okay, we won. This is just a stepping stone as part of our journey to winning the cup. Whereas Boston really seemed as though they were exuberant. The team picture around the Wales trophy, the Prince of Wales trophy, it seemed like a little bit.
I will say this, Drew.
A team just happy to be there, maybe for the cup
premature.
Finals.
Yeah, I thought about a little bit about that, but I will say this: can we give full credit to the Boston Bruins for making it to the Stanley Cup final without arguably their number one center?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Bruins deserve full marks. They rolled just so many different threats out of Tampa Bay on a nightly basis that you never knew where the attack was going to come from. And I think credit also to Nathan Horton. Talk about a guy stepping up his game when it matters most. I mean, he's played in relative anonymity most of his career. I mean, he was stuck in Florida where, you know, the three retirees and 500 Canadians fans saw him on a nightly basis. And he goes to Boston in a trade that he wanted, and he's proven himself. I mean, Boston's not an easy city to play in, and he's proven himself when the game matters most, when it's right on the line, he's the one stepping up for the Bruins, scoring that key goal. Yep. And that's what we asked, you know, throughout the season and a couple months ago before we started, you know, the playoff preview and everything. We said, what player on Boston is going to step up and score the key goal for them? Because that was our concern.
And that was unbelievable. It has been unbelievable. The Horton Krejci, who I'm forgetting right now.
Lucic. By the way, I said Canucks have been to the finals in 81. David Arvidsson.
94. 94.
Yes, 94. They were in the finals.
Oh, but they've only. Yeah.
The 94 season doesn't count, though, the strike shortened season.
But yeah,
no, that was 95.
That Horton, the Horton Krejci line.
Lucic was
unbelievable. And, you know, getting back to what Richie said, I think that the series was really up and down. The goaltending was very bad, except for a few games, right? You could maybe pick out
a couple.
Game 5, where Thomas stood on his head, and Game 7 yesterday, Rolison was unbelievable, Drew. But you're right. I mean, Boston really showed that they wanted it more. Horton was a guy that came to Boston with all these expectations and really turned it up, you know, in the second half of the season and really impressed all of us in the Stanley Cup Finals and everyone. And you have to give your hats off to them because Thomas was very bad in many games in that series. I think if you look at the goalies' numbers, they were really way up as far as, you know, every stat goes. So kudos to them. And I really think that they're going to give Vancouver a good run for their money.
I think they will, too. I don't think this is going to be an easy series by any stretch.
The thing that Boston can do to you is they can hurt you in so many ways in that you have Krejci as a tremendous passer. Great vision on the ice. You have a guy like Horton who can skate, who can shoot. Lucic who can, you know, has a pretty good shot. His physical player goes to the net. So right there, there's a variety of skills. And then on Bergeron's line, you have a veteran like Mark Recchi, who's a good passer, although he's not obviously not close to what he once was. And then you have Brad Marchand, who adds an amazing element of speed on the ice. Not great hands, obviously, but a great element of speed. And then you get down to the checking lines, and you have a Chris Kelly. I don't love, but Chris Kelly, who can do the responsible thing defensively. And you have guys like Sagan now, who can contribute offensively. And guys like Gregory Campbell, who know their role and are out there in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the game to kill the time. So you have guys who can play different roles. And I think that obviously helps them. And you have Bergeron in there to win faceoffs, too. I don't know if you want to look forward yet. Maybe let's talk about Vancouver-San Jose before we look forward. Next segment, we'll look forward to a preview.
Okay.
But in terms of I want to switch over to Vancouver-San Jose.
Okay.
Because, you know, before even that, I think one thing we have to establish here to our listeners, and I think everybody here in the studio knows this, is, of course, you need to be a good team. I mean, both teams who made the finals here now, I believe, have the top save percentages in the National Hockey League. That's what the Hockey Prospectus guys were talking about last night. Top save percentages in the National Hockey League. So goaltending has been a factor. Obviously, their shooting percentage and stuff has been a factor. But let's establish this, guys. Both of these teams were in the first round, Game 7, overtime. So don't tell me there's no a strong element of luck here that these teams are made it this far. Now, they're both good teams. They were both good teams.
I don't think luck's the right word.
During the right... Drew, I mean, they were one bounce away.
Well, so
Chris Campoli, one bounce away from Chicago.
I know, but why is that luck?
Well, hold on. Luck, I don't think what Richie's trying to say is luck isn't a determining factor at all, but it plays in. Like, let's be honest. Kevin Bieksa's game-winning goal was the result of... Nobody was even looking at Kevin Bieksa.
It was a bad
right?
bounce.
And a blown icing call.
You get those bounces, Drew. The good teams get those bounces, or
I don't.
Those bounces are
just
part
happen.
Of it. They're not the main factor in team winning, but they play a role.
The point
hey,
is,
luck plays a role in poker, but skill plays a role in poker,
exactly.
Right?
And that, but the fact is that those are both a factor. Skill, obviously, is a huge factor. Over longer periods of time, it'll be a determining factor for the most part, but luck is a significant factor, guys. And both of these teams are good. Don't get me wrong. I picked Vancouver. I've picked Boston in, I think, every series that they've played. So I like both of these teams, and they're good. But they were both one goal away, one bounce away from being out in the first round.
Yeah, okay, fine. What's your point?
My point is this, Drew. When we're looking and we're saying, you know, Vigneault's done a great job, which I think he has. Julian's done a pretty good job, which I think he has. It's amazing to me the analysis of the coach. If a bounce were to go the opposite way.
Well, and that's life. I mean, you never know what... You're right. And they would have been criticized, of course. And, I mean, you know, when you make the right decision, you're a hero. But, you know, look, if Guy Boucher doesn't start Mike Smith in that game, or he does start Mike Smith and Mike Smith looks terrible, he's a fool.
I think also
trust your gut at some point.
You go back to the old series in the early 2000s or the late 90s when the Detroit and Colorado's, and for the most part, those teams would cruise through the first couple rounds. So we're not talking about dominating performance.
Well, but there's parity in the NHL.
And that's
we know
basically
that.
What I'm trying to get at here is that you need a lot of luck and a lot of skill, but you need both.
That's right. But I mean, if you look at these two teams, I mean, Vancouver to me appears to be a team that is peaking right at the right moment.
They've been the best team all year long.
I know, but they didn't play their best hockey in the first round, and they didn't play their.
No,
best.
Drew, I'd argue about that because I think they played against the best team, or you know, as good as basically San Jose. In that first round, and I don't know if they didn't play poor, they didn't play well, or it was because that Chicago that they
Richie,
didn't play
I'm
well.
I'm going to save Drew here.
You don't have to save me, as
just for one second though. I do think that Vancouver did play very well in the first series, but I would have to say though that if you look at the second series to the third series, I didn't think they played that well against Nashville. The Sedins were completely shut down by the Weber-Suter pairing.
Yeah, well,
so I'd have to agree with you that they are peaking when you compare what they were like going into the Nashville series. Remember, they were tired. They didn't play that well. I mean, Nashville shouldn't have really given them that hard of a time.
Vancouver's earned it here, but let's be honest here. It was 2-1 for Vancouver in that series against San Jose, and then they got dominated, really. And the next two, I mean, obviously there was 5-on-3s in Game 4, but they got dominated for the most part of Game 4 and Game 5, and they kind of got lucky.
Yep.
So, don't get me wrong. They deserve to be here. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that they hasn't been in the dominating fashion some would like to make it out to be.
I don't think anybody dominates anymore. When's the last hockey team in the playoffs to dominate their way through the playoffs?
That's a fair question.
I mean, I just don't think it happens because the number one and number eight
teams... Did Chicago go to any 7 games last year? No.
I don't think so, but did you think they were dominant?
No, they weren't, but I mean, they beat Nashville in 6, and they beat Vancouver in 6, then they beat San Jose in 4, and then they beat Philly in 6, so they already went to a deciding game.
Okay, you're right.
It's more of a dominant performance.
Yeah, they were more dominant than maybe Vancouver has been, but I don't think...
I think we could argue also that if you were to put that Chicago roster from last year up against any team right now, they would be the champions.
Drew, I think absolutely.
So the cap obviously has
a... You can dominate a game. You can't dominate a series anymore. It just doesn't happen. You're not going to sweep someone and win every game by four goals. It just doesn't happen. You're right. I mean, but if there's been a dominating performance, Vancouver has dominated at times, but they're in a position now where they're a little bit more rested.
Yep.
Excuse me, my voice is breaking, Drew. We're excited. I mean, I forgot Milan Lucic was on the top line. Richie forgot the Canucks made the 94 finals. We're excited.
Yeah, exactly. But one other thing quickly. I want to give credit where credit's due here, and I agree with Don Cherry. There were no penalty calls last night. I didn't feel like there were any deserving ones, but I always feel like this, Drew. You know, they say refs put away their whistles. You know, Gabe talked about that a few weeks ago on the show when you and I were out of town,
yeah,
about how really that's not as much the case as people think. But one thing I think to consider is, you know, when you say refs put away the whistle, what fans want is, you know, refs have their own personalities and their own view on the games. But I think all fans want in deciding games like that is you're only calling a penalty that every ref would think is a penalty, not just you personally. And I thought yesterday, the refs didn't get in the way. There was nothing really that stood out in terms of missed calls, and that's a testament to the players playing with discipline, but also to the refs putting the egos aside. And we criticize them all the time. Let's give them credit where credit's due. Wasn't yesterday's game great?
I thought it was. And they were happy to blend into the background because they didn't need to be front and center. There was no reason for them to do. I thought they did. I agree with you there that they called a professional game, and they knew their role and they stayed with it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to preview the Cup Finals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290, brought to you in part by Superlube Auto Centers. They didn't make the car you drive, they make the car you drive forever.
Welcome back to the program. 20 minutes after 9 a.m. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you want to join us on the program, 780-1290. Put a 204 in front of that if you're calling from out of town. 204-780-1290. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Send us your messages. The best tweets will be read on air. And you can always email us, drew@illegalcurve.com. Let's continue on with our preview of the Stanley Cup Finals now. You know, you got a very interesting... You got an interesting series. Two teams with a long history of not winning the Stanley Cup. Both of them, what did we say? I think the Bruins have been 44 years and the Canucks have been 40...
I think it's 38 for the Bruins and 40 for the Canucks because the Canucks... Isn't that 38, Richie?
The Bruins win in 72, didn't they?
Yeah.
Is that it's it? 38 and 39, maybe?
You're close. I mean,
it's on our Twitter page. I'm looking it up right now.
I think Vancouver's longer, but because they've never won.
Yeah.
I think this is good. This is Richie mentioned this earlier, and I think he is bang on, that this is a really good matchup for the NHL. But more importantly, who cares if it's a good matchup for the NHL? It's a good matchup for fans.
Bruins,
because now there's going to be a storyline, Drew, and that storyline, not only is it going to be two really good teams who you correctly predicted were going to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it's going to be two teams. I mean, this is a pretty big deal. One team is going to win. We were treated to Chicago's victory last year, and that was all, you know, the whole deal with them not having won a Stanley Cup since, you know, the 50s. And this year's going to be a pretty big deal. I don't think that it's been hyped up, and that might be a good thing. I think it will be hyped up, though.
Bruins Cup drought is at 39 years. Canucks is going on 40 years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What's the key matchup in the series from your perspective?
Well, Drew, I think the key matchup in the series is, well, I mean, it's probably a two-part answer here. The first one, obviously, would be Chara against the Sedins. I mean, that's the huge series. Obviously, Sedins, now they went off against a San Jose group that didn't have the shutdown pair. Boyle and Murray aren't the shutdown pair that Weber and Suter were. So you have Chara now with Seidenberg. It's an interesting combination because Seidenberg likes contact, is a pretty physical player, and is a good skater. Sedins, you know, kind of like to move the puck around a bit. He's not necessarily a positionally sound kind of player, like a Lidstrom type. But you have Chara, who is can shut down basically anybody. Long stick, get in the lanes. The Sedins like to make those passes. They don't love to go to the net all the time. Not all, really. That's the key to me. And then, of course, the key would be if Kessler is healthy and then how Boston matches up against him.
The 5 days off or the 6 days off, whatever it's going to end up being for Kessler, are going to be huge because he certainly did not look healthy, fully healthy.
Yeah.
No one's fully healthy this time of year, but he really did look like he did something to his leg sort of at the end of the San Jose series there, which would be of huge concern because a Ryan Kessler at 80% is just a huge advantage for the Boston Bruins.
I wonder about Boyd, you know, how are they going to put up their matchups in general? Is Boychuk, I mean, Boychuk's not a great skater, so can you put two guys who aren't great skaters, him and Chara, for example, together? Do you have to switch up your combination? They played a number of combinations here a bit. Regardless, the Bruins, after their top two pairing, and that basically is Chara and whoever they're playing him with,
aren't great defensively, and Vancouver has good offensive depth. Now, it's obviously the Kessler line. But if Kessler's hurt, and he looked hurt, obviously, in the last Game 5 of the San Jose-Vancouver series, if Kessler is hurt, their offense after that, you know, can hurt you, but it's not dominant. And so if he's playing hurt, that is a significant, obviously, advantage for the Boston Bruins. And if Chara can shut down Sedin, that gives him a far better chance. So those, to me, the Chara-Sedin is obviously the big matchup. But the Kessler being healthy and then the Boston, you know, second defense pairing is more interesting to me.
Very good point. I mean, I think, to me, you look at the Boston forward depth, and I think that matches up well against Vancouver. Because, I mean, you know, Vancouver's defense has been solid, but I don't think they've been...
Well, they're deep, Drew.
They're deep, exactly. But, I mean, I think Boston's forwards are also very deep. Boston can roll out three solid lines of forwards in a wave nonstop that I think might give Vancouver's defense a little bit of trouble.
I don't disagree with that, but, I mean, if San Jose didn't give him trouble, I wonder if Boston would give him trouble. I mean, they give him trouble in terms of shots, don't get me wrong. So, yeah, I mean, their point's well taken, Drew. I would like to see Sagan have more of a role here. You need offense. You're going to need offense to beat Vancouver, best offensive team in the league this year. And you have your first line with Krejci, you have your second line with Bergeron, and then you have your third line. You know, are you going to throw Sagan out there and give him more of an opportunity? Are you going to play him on the wing? Are you going to play him at center? How are you going to do that? I mean, I would want him at center. I'd want to give him the creativity and the free flow. Obviously, you have Chris Kelly there, and you have other guys. To me, you want to match Vancouver's, and you want to pressure. You know, against Vancouver, a good offense is a very good defense. And I think that's a cliche, but I think it's true. They're a very good transition team. Keep them on their toes. Sagan's fast. He's got good skills. I realize he's young, and I realize coaches don't like to trust young players for the most part. But, my God,
How much was Guy Boucher was putting Victor Hedman out there? Yeah. You know, every second shift.
I just don't think you can leave any bullets. You can't leave any bullets in the chamber.
Drew, this is the Cup Finals. Getting back to what we were saying earlier, though. I think Vancouver's going to win the series, but I really think you're right. Boston is going to win some games in the series, I believe. And the problem here is that this is going to be a different series. Vancouver is a much better defensive team than Tampa. Let's not get that twisted. They're much better, and Vancouver will control the puck. If Kessler's injured, yeah, of course, that's going to be a huge blow to everything. We have to assume he's healthy until we hear otherwise, right? We have to assume that. But you're right. I mean, Boston has done a very good job, and it's that top line, and Bergeron, and Recchi, and Marchand. Brad Marchand has been unbelievable. I mean, the guy is very young, and Seguin, I mean, you're starting to see how much that's going to haunt the Toronto Maple Leafs, but... Of course, Boston is going to get goals. They're gonna cause some problems, but it's not going to be a type of game like we saw yesterday. Boston dominated Tampa yesterday, in my opinion, in all facets of the game. Controlled the play.
I didn't like Tampa's strategy, though. They sat back.
Tampa sat back, but they looked like the tired team. Boston had all of the momentum and energy, Drew. And you're right. I think Vancouver, they're gonna want to, you know, employ a strategy of controlling the play. Getting out to early leads, which seems pretty simple, but you know, Boston is not a pushover. And if anybody thinks this is going to be a 4 or 5 game series, then, you know, make your arguments. But I think Boston has earned the right for us to predict that the series could go to 7
games.
Let's
talk matchups here,
okay?
Because that's what I think always comes down to, and you know that I always say that, Drew, and then it comes down to matchups. You know, if you're going to be the Boston Bruins, and we'll say it before, we talked about it a minute ago, I assume they're going to stick Seidenberg with Chara like they have.
Right.
You know,
Seidenberg's played fantastically.
Fantastic, yeah, absolutely. He's a very good skater. He's strong on his skates. He's very strong. He can move the puck pretty well, too. Now, yeah, sometimes he doesn't have the best decisions. He's not the best offensive player, but he's played tremendous hockey, and he's really, really proven his worth here. And a nice compliment to Zdeno Chara. Now, that combination you're going to put up against the Sedins, almost assuredly, right?
Yeah.
And I talked about before, it leaves your Kessler, Raymond, and Higgins line. You're going to throw that up against probably Ferens and Boychuk if you're Vancouver. And now Vancouver will probably willingly do that, and Boston will have to match that up. Boston, that's their second-best defense pairing. I mean, you're not leaving Thomas Caberle against Ryan Kessler's line. Injured or not, Thomas Caberle is an awful defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's not strong enough on the boards, especially. He's not even willing to go into the boards. So those are your defense matchups for Boston against your offense. Now, what about the third line? Well, you have Caberle and McQuaid are going to have to play up against Torres and Hansen, who's played very well, by the way, and then Lapierre or Malhotra, we're not sure. Malhotra's big.
Richie, you know, remember where you're at. That's where the weakness happens. Mm-hmm. I think Caberle has been really, really bad.
I don't think he's been as bad as people say.
And McQuaid is very suspect on defense. He is. It's like the equivalent to Andrew Alberts. He's their Achilles heel on defense, and that's where the line matchups come into effect, because Chara will match up against both the Sedin Burrows line and the Kessler line.
Right.
Because he plays 30 minutes.
I don't think Caberle has been. I don't think he's been fantastic, but I don't think he's been as woeful as people have made.
He's getting better,
to
be. But regardless of how well he's played as a whole, Drew, he is a poor defensive player.
Agreed. No argument there.
Think about it in terms of this. Okay, you want to talk matchups? Say it's Lapierre. Say Malhotra doesn't come back, and we hope he does. Say he doesn't come back. Mm-hmm. Lapierre.
It's amazing that we're even talking about Malhotra coming back. By the way,
skater Lapierre.
It doesn't matter. Okay. He almost lost his eye.
Hanson's a hard worker. He's got not bad hands. You know, third liner, play the right wing there. And then Torres, okay? Think about that for a second. Can that line control the boards against Caberle and McQuaid?
Obviously they can.
I think that's an advantage for Vancouver. So that's one distinct advantage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think now you look at it, let's look at it from the other side. We haven't even talked about the fact that Boston's power play is god-awful, but let's talk about it the other way in terms of because Vancouver, Boston has good forwards. Let's talk about the other matchups, okay? You have Vancouver team that is going to put your number one pairing is going to be Hamhuis and Bieksa.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to throw that up against probably Krejci, Lucic, and Horton. Now, Hamhuis is a shutdown defenseman. Bieksa is a good puck mover, a good solid defenseman. But, I mean, Boston, I mean, that's a head-to-head. That's a Sedin kind of against Chara matchup. That's strength against strength. That's what you're going to want from Vancouver. Now, Vancouver is going to have to play against Bergeron's line with probably Alex Edler and Sammy Salo.
Not bad.
Not bad. For either squad.
Well, I mean, and people forget how well Alex Edler was playing before the back surgery that shelved him for about 50 games.
Right. And now Ben Kuzma came on and said he's been a little bit inconsistent, so Boston maybe want to exploit that. But then here again, it's the third line against the third defense pairing. I think that's an interesting combination for both. Obviously, your best players have to be your best players. But here we go. Boston's third line will be some form of Sagan, Ryder, and Kelly. Okay?
Yeah. A lot of talent there.
Sagan, Ryder, and Kelly against Chris Tanev and Keith Ballard.
Tanev, we're assuming, is going in for Rome.
Right.
Tanev's played well, but I mean, the advantage to me, if they unleash Sagan, if Sagan gets unleashed, he's got first line talent.
And we're obviously assuming he's on a leash. Figuratively speaking,
because he's playing a role that the team wants him to play.
And if Ryder continues to play well, Ryder is a terrific shot, and he's a goal scorer. If he continues to play, I think they have an advantage there. Now, I think Vancouver's advantage is a little bit more, because I really worry about that 5-6 for Boston. But there could be an advantage there. So I think even strength, the Boston's a good even strength team, Vancouver's a tremendous even strength team. I think even strength, you know, you could go both ways here, especially with very good goaltending. Now, of course, you get to the fact that Boston's power play is terrible.
Awful.
Is that the deciding factor? It very well could be. Drew, do you want to make predictions now?
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll take phone calls. We'll hear from people what they want on their predictions. We'll give our predictions. We're going to open up the phones. We're going to talk some relocation stuff. We got an interesting article from Chris Vivlemore this morning. Lots going on. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue the discussion. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 9:34 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. We have a jam-packed show still to come on the program this morning from the Winnipeg Free Press. Martin Cash, former Winnipeg Jets head coach Bob Murdoch, former Winnipeg Jet player, now with NBC and Comcast Sports out of Chicago, Eddie Olczyk is going to join us. And from the National Post, Michael Trakos. The phone number, 780-1290, area code 204, 780-1290. Tweet us at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And come join the Illegal Curve chat taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is there operating the R desk, answering your questions and facilitating a great chat involving many hockey fans taking place right now. Looks like we have our first caller of the morning, Mike in Windsor Park. He thinks that the goalie matchup is the deciding factor. Mike, welcome to the program. Mike, are you there? Looks like we may have lost Mike, so we'll try and we'll work on that. But 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290.
Hey, talking about a couple of coaches in this series that both were fired by the Habs, shockingly.
Yeah.
And another coach in the previous series who was a coach of the Habs farm team in Hamilton. Drew, I want to talk about faceoffs. Obviously, faceoffs are a factor. Ryan Kessler's been winning faceoffs at 55% in the playoffs. Maxim Lapierre just over 50%. Aside from that, they haven't been great, the Canucks. However, Manny Malhotra is as good as it gets when it comes to faceoffs, and he would be a huge addition to them, obviously for many factors, but especially faceoffs. In terms of Boston, Boston's had Bergeron winning faceoffs at an insane 63%, 62.3% level, and I think that Rich Peverly has been at 52%. David Krejci has been at 52%. So there's a nice advantage there for Boston that would probably be negated if Manny Malhotra did come back, because then I think the faceoff advantage would be maybe slightly in Vancouver's favor, but be almost equal. So again, these teams have very, very similar, you know, strengths and similar weaknesses.
The Manny Malhotra wild card is very relevant for this series. First of all, who knows what kind of shape he's going to be in? He's not going to be in game shape because there's just no way to recreate that. But his, you know, even as a guy just who's focused on taking the faceoffs, his presence there is a huge advantage.
And we've all seen clips of Malhotra, you know, helping Lapierre. He's the best faceoff guy in the league, and if he comes back, that's huge. And I don't want to hear people saying that because he, you know, missed a little bit of time, he won't be ready. The guy's a veteran; he'll be fine. So, let's hope that he comes back, because that gives Vancouver an advantage.
Well, you know what? You want your best players playing at the key times in the playoffs.
They got him, so. Drew, for the, right now. They got him for right now. Stanley Cup
Finals.
They
got him to take that key playoff, the key face-off. That's what they got him for. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. Let's go to Greg. He wants to talk about the schedule. Greg, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Very well, Greg. How about yourself?
Good. I was looking at the schedule, looking at my Twitter account, and this is basically going undetected. Problem. If you go to the NHL.com or wherever you go for your NHL scheduling information, Game 5 of the final is on June the 11th. UFC 131, which features Shane Carwin and Junior Dos Santos as the main event, is on Saturday, June the 12th. Last time I checked, it takes more than 16 hours to set up for a UFC pay-per-view event. And I think that I'll say this is like in the words of young people talk, epic fail on the Vancouver Canucks and the Rogers Arena administration for not clearing this out. And I think that I just basically put my point of view on terms of the scheduling per se, and I think that that game five should be rescheduled on the afternoon of June the 12th, and in my point of view, the Cup final should be starting on May the 31st.
Interesting question. Interesting point, Greg. Appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
I think my bigger issue with that is that NBC is running the show here.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I believe if Greg refers to that June 11th being a Friday. I believe that the league plays next weekend. The weekend after. It goes Friday, Monday, and doesn't have a Saturday night hockey game for Hockey Night in Canada.
That's right.
Once again, the NBC deciding what the NHL will do. And once again, the NHL making decisions based upon the United States television deal, even though the Canadian deal pays more and is going to pay more when the contract is up in a year. We're Canadian. I stop pandering to the U.S. audience. It's a Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night. It's a tradition. Don't avoid it.
Anybody who wants to watch that game in the U.S. is going to watch it regardless of the night that it's on. It's appointment viewing. It's not attracting the random casual guy, you know, Friday night, Saturday night. Doesn't matter. They're going to go out. If they want to go out Friday night and they're not a real hockey fan, they're going to go out regardless of when the game is. To me, Vancouver wins in five games.
That's a prediction.
No. I'm talking about the last series. Vancouver wins in five games. Boston wins in seven games. Vancouver doesn't have an advantage anymore for winning early. What's this 5 days off nonsense? The NBA Finals is starting before the Cup Finals.
Drew,
why isn't this game taking place on Monday?
I want to go back, though, to Greg's call. Can we check when Game 5 is? I think it might be June 9th. Can we check that for Greg? Because I seem to remember Game 5 being
Kmart sucks, Ezzy. What, are you Rain Man over here?
No, but
It's up here on the board.
I'm pretty sure it's June 9th.
No, Greg's right.
Was it June 11th?
Yeah, Friday. No, Friday, June 10th, the UFC event. And Greg has a valid point here, I think. Okay. I have no idea about the building of arena.
So, Drew,
of,
Game 5 is June 10th.
Game 5 is Friday, June 10th in Vancouver.
Okay. And Game 6 is Monday.
And Game 6 is Monday in Boston. So if there is a UFC event in Vancouver on Saturday, I'm not sure how they're going to turn it around that quickly.
Well, I mean, that's not. They can turn around an NBA to an NHL to NBA within 5 minutes. But, I mean, they do it. They
but
do.
That's just putting a floor down.
Yeah, but they do. I mean, I can figure it out. They can have a lot of workers there. My issue is that they're not playing on a Saturday night in the finals.
And my issue, my primary issue, is that for some reason they're waiting till Wednesday to start the
series. They should start the latest Monday.
Monday is a perfect day. There's no reason not to start.
I agree with you, Drew. I mean, there should be an advantage for a team for finishing off a team quickly, more quickly than the team in the other conference. And Vancouver, as you said, won in 5 games. Boston won in 7. Vancouver should get an advantage from that, and Boston should have to play Friday night, fly cross-country, and play Monday because the team that finished it off quicker should have the advantage.
Exactly. So the victors go to spoils, but for whatever reason, Wednesday is absurd as far as I'm concerned. It just doesn't make any sense. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290.
We talk about a lot of factors in terms of the even strength quality of play. We talk about face-offs. We talk about coaching. There's a number of factors, obviously, the intangibles. I think go both ways. Both of these teams have veterans on their teams. Both of these teams have guys who've won before and, you know, on different levels. You know, whether it be Luongo in the Olympics or whether it be, you know, other guys on Boston and Mark Recchi and guys like that. Anyhow, power play. Power play, Boston's been absolutely awful. They're scoring at a rate of 8.2%, which is unbelievably terrible. Vancouver, on the other hand, is scoring at a rate of 28.3%,
which
very, very good.
Incredible.
How do you balance that? Of course, on the other hand, you talk about penalty killing. Vancouver's penalty kill has been 80.6%. Not great. Boston's has been 79.4. So their penalty killing is about the same. The power play, there's a huge discrepancy. Out of all the things that we've analyzed so far, you know, if I had to pick, quickly going through the roster, I'd say the goalies is a wash. I'd say the defense, Vancouver has an advantage. Forwards, probably Vancouver has a smaller advantage, but a little bit of one. We talk about all the other factors. I think they're fairly even. Maybe some slight advantages to Vancouver, some to Boston. But the biggest advantage to me out of all of them is the power play right now. Because Boston, I mean, it's easy to say, as you look at you know, Boston pulling Caberle off the first unit for a while there. Caberle comes, has the puck. The forward who's, you know, playing the box will back off of him so much so because he knows he's not going to shoot. And if he does shoot, he doesn't even have a good shot. Boston needs to be more creative in terms of their entry into the zone. There's many reasons why Boston's power play is poor, but they better strategically figure it out. And I don't know why they would suddenly figure it out now, but they better do it before they play Vancouver in the finals, because if their power play is scoring at an 8.2% I had before, an 8.2% success rate, they will have no chance to win the finals.
Let's go to the predictions before we go to break. Predictions, Richard.
Vancouver in 6.
Ezra.
Ezra?
Ezra.
Ezra.
I'm going to go Vancouver in 7.
I'm going to echo Richard. I think it's Vancouver in 6. But, I mean, you never
know. I'm taking Vancouver the whole way. I'm not going to back off now.
No, I wouldn't expect you to back off right now. They seem as though they're peaking, and they just seem to be the better team right now. And sometimes it's just that simple. Sometimes they have, it's as simple as they have the more talent and the better schemes.
If Vancouver wins, they'd be the best team all year, and they would have won the cup.
It's deserving.
Yeah.
If Boston wins, it's an upset, but it's not an undeserving upset. They've been a very good team all season.
Absolutely, it wouldn't be a shocking upset.
No, exactly right.
But it'd be a surprise. What are the odds, you think, Drew? Percentage wise for each team,
70-30.
Well, that high, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think 70-30.
65-35.
62-38.
62-38, that's pretty precise.
Yeah, that is
based
precise.
On some sort of calibration you've done?
I know, that's what I would guess. I haven't done it.
61.9.
You would guess 62%?
Yeah, 62%.
Okay.
Can we find that out online?
I'm not sure what metric you're using to figure that out. Okay, call Gabe. Gabe Desjardins behind
it's too early in the West.
Yeah, exactly. See if he knows the exact percentage. Let's go to break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. We're going to transition into the relocation talk. Of course, if you still want to talk Cup Final, we'll do it.
The deal is not done, and time is running out.
Wow, we've been hearing that for a while. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 9:48 in the morning.
It's a beautiful Drew.
Nobody wants to hear that. Absolutely nobody wants to hear that. You guys excited for the U2 concert tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah? Are you going to U2 tomorrow night?
Yeah, I'm going tonight and tomorrow night.
So you're going to just sit in the stadium by yourself tonight?
No, they're playing a show at the Royal Albert Arms tonight. just for, I think there's only...
You're listening to a CD in the car, huh?
25
yeah, so
people
you're just going to be sitting in your car outside of the Royal Albert Arms with the CD blaring, right?
Yeah.
That's
more or less. They're going to play mainly just their greatest hits album and a little bit of Zaropa.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. Let's, if you want to talk about the Cup Finals, we'll be glad to take your calls. Let's transition a little bit over into the relocation debate, and that's largely where we're going to spend the next two-plus hours. You know, here's a blog post from Chris Vivlemore early this morning. Chris, of course, a regular guest on Sports Radio 1290, both on our program and on Hustler and Lawless. Covering the story for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, here's a quote from Don Waddell, Thrashers team president, in response to a television report emanating out of Atlanta that once again a filmmaker is an interested party in purchasing the Thrashers.
Is it Guy Madden?
No, it's Stephen Rollins I assume it's Stephen Rollins. He's been the only filmmaker so far.
Is he related to Henry Rollins of...
No, he's not.
Black Flag?
No, he's not. But he's been already discounted as not being really a viable purchaser of the Thrasher.
What about the Balkan?
The Balkan has already thrown in the towel. We got that email a couple weeks ago.
Drew, I'm wondering, who is creating these people? Is there like an organization that...
Well, they're real
like,
people.
The internet.
Can you pay someone to just say, hey, I want to make something up about someone who's going to buy the team? Huh? Oh, yeah, Little John. Yeah, that guy Little John is a rapper in Atlanta. I think he's going to buy the team. Or maybe Ludacris, he's another rapper in Atlanta. Maybe he's going to buy the team.
DMX is down, I hear.
Like, could I get paid to make up people that are going to buy teams? Could I start saying that Burton Cummings is going to buy a WHL team, or Randy Bachman's going to buy a WHL team?
I think you just did, without getting
paid. Is that a rumor?
Yeah. Anyways, here's the statement from Thrasher's team
president.
Does
he tell us that...
Sorry, go ahead, Drew. He doesn't say that time is running. Actually,
does he say
a
deal's not done?
He does sort of say that. Along with all other groups who have expressed an interest in pursuing an ownership opportunity, which has happened as recently as earlier this week, we have said continuously that until an agreement is signed and approved by the Board of Governors, it's never too late, but they will have to move very quickly and decisively. Ownership still is committed to selling at a greatly reduced price to anyone committed to Atlanta. First, I've heard about a greatly reduced price. Anybody else ever heard of a greatly reduced price for the
Thrashers? It's over. Give it up.
I've only heard about that at Costco, but...
That's where you've heard about greatly reduced prices?
Or Walmart.
Yeah. Okay.
The team...
I actually don't shop at Walmart, but if I did, I'm sure there's a Thrashers team up for sale in the first aisle.
Thrashers t-shirts for $2.99.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. 780-1290, area code 204-780-1290. You can join the live chat taking place at www.illegalcurve.com. This is a question that was asked on the website a couple weeks ago, and I want to turn it over to you guys and see if we can take some calls on it as well. You know, assuming this deal gets done, and
the deal isn't done.
The clock is ticking.
I know.
Time's running out.
Stop it, both of you. I'm trying to get a point across here. Thank you. Who would you like to see as the Jets' first opponent playing in Winnipeg?
Hartford Whalers.
I'd love to see Phoenix, Drew.
You'd like to see Phoenix?
No way. No way, no chance that the NHL does that, but Phoenix would be a beautiful first opponent, wouldn't it?
I think it would be. The question I have about Phoenix, though, is do you really still feel the same ties there? There's one player that played on the Jets.
I don't care. You want to beat them.
You just want to...
Yeah.
You don't care about that?
No. You want to beat them. That's it.
So your vote is for Phoenix.
Yes, absolutely. And as the caller pointed out last week, this is the year the Pacific Division would play at the Southeast Division teams. So Phoenix would be playing in Winnipeg.
Right, that's true. So based on
we get one game with them, one game with Atlanta. Sorry, Anaheim.
Yeah. So your vote is for Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Ezzy?
Quickly, Ezzy, your time's running out before your answer.
I would say
your time is running out. Like the deadline to complete the sale.
If it wasn't Phoenix, Richie, I'd probably say any one of the three Western Canadian teams: Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver. Just because Winnipeg used to play in the Smythe Division, but I have no real preference. I'm going to be excited whoever they play.
Habs or Leafs, too, now 4 times a year.
It could be the Florida Panthers. I'm going to be there. So.
So you really you don't? I'm surprised that you guys aren't passionate about that. I'm sort of passionate about that.
About the passion, let me get into this for a second here, about the passion. For whatever reason, I don't know who's responsible for it. I'm probably putting the weight of this, this responsibility on the NHL's shoulders. But there was a lot of momentum after that report by Stephen Brunt on the Thursday, and I realized things need to get done to put cross the T's and dot the I's and all that stuff. How much of it, I don't know, is taking so long. But they've really killed the momentum here. I mean, the city was moving of excitement. Now it's just not skepticism, but just frustration. I think they've failed to capture that excitement, and I'm not blaming anybody in terms of Winnipeg. I think that the NHL is a significant factor here. You know, wanting to ruin the Tampa-Boston series or wanting to overshadow all that stuff. This announcement is something that needs to get done fairly soon because people, you want to capture excitement, Drew. You don't want people and fans who want to buy tickets and want to buy jerseys to get really, really, really frustrated. Now, I realize regardless, whenever the announcement is, there will be a lot of excitement. But it seems to me that they missed an opportunity. I'm not sure why it's not done yet, or I think it's done, but why it's not announced yet. There's opportunities here that I would hope are not lost.
Richie, I'm gonna get a little bit more harsh than you did. We were on the radio Thursday night, Hustler hosted.
2 weeks ago.
Not this past
That's
Thursday.
Right. Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Night.
Thursdays
okay,
ago.
Okay, it feels like it was...
It does feel like that.
Feels
I agree.
Like it was 2 hours ago. Stephen Brunt is a respected journalist who works for the Globe and Mail, the most popular newspaper in the country. He said that the deal was done and there was going to be an announcement. And then every single media outlet denied it, and they have their reasons for doing so. I personally believe I believe what Stephen Brunt wrote. I believe that the deal is done and that the
NHL... Who do you think Stephen Brunt found out from?
I can't answer that. You'd have to ask Stephen Brunt, and he may or may not tell you. The fact is, he had two sources. Very common in journalism that you have to have two sources. You don't just go on one source. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because that person might not be telling the truth. So you go with two sources.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the thinking is if two people say it, they could also be lying. But anyways,
no.
I'm digressing here. The point is, I think that Richie is right. I think that this has been a huge buzzkill by the media at large. And I think if you're saying that the deal is not done, tell us why Stephen Brunt said it was done. Instead of just saying the deal is done, instead of just saying the deal's not done, the deal's not done, the deal's not done. Well, why did Stephen Brunt report that the deal was done then? Why would he didn't just say, "Oh, I'm going to report that the deal is done," because I just want to be the first to break the story.
I really don't think he told him. I mean, by all accounts, all the politicians in the city thought the announcement was supposed to be Tuesday.
Right.
Right. So what happened there?
It seems like the NHL, out of spite. I mean, we spoke about it last week. We said jokingly, based on the Seinfeld episode, where Jerry tries to return a jacket based on spite. You can't cancel a press conference based on spite.
I don't know, Drew, if we're going to have an opportunity to interview Gary Bettman at any point in time. If he's going to be in town here, we have an opportunity. But I would ask him one question. Well, many questions, but this would be the main question I'd ask him. And he wouldn't give me a straight answer, but I'm going to ask it rhetorically. Does the NHL need Winnipeg, or does Winnipeg need the NHL? And the truth is that the NHL needs Winnipeg.
Yes.
This is an entity right now, a massive business that is bleeding money everywhere.
The NHL you're talking about.
Yes, and right now you have a city here with willing ownership, with willing fans, and this is how you're treated, a city that you essentially need right now, because nobody wants to own the team in Atlanta, nobody wants to own the team in Phoenix, and that's not out of spite towards Phoenix or Atlanta. That is fact. And you have a city here who wants a team, who has a willing owner, willing fans, and you're delaying this out, and Gary Bettman has the nerve to say, it's not done. Just say no comment, Gary. It's enough already. Just say no comment. It's not done. I won't do this. You are treating the people who you need. The city has proven, as you said 2 weeks ago and have said before, doesn't need the NHL. Right now, the NHL needs Winnipeg.
I couldn't agree.
And look at the way you're being treated. Look at the way the city is being treated. The reports, it's enough.
Let me ask.
Everybody's in the dark so much. And I mean, Stephen Brunt came out. Who do you think you got sourced from? Well, I have a fairly good idea who his source was, and I bet you it was a pretty influential part of someone in the group of True North.
Obviously, you're talking about David Thompson.
Or somebody very, very close to associated.
It's a legitimate source.
Would Stephen Brunner come out and said the announcement's Tuesday? If he wasn't darn sure the announcement was Tuesday,
he would be fired.
What are we now?
He would be fired.
We're Saturday.
Yeah.
Is there any excitement on the streets anymore?
It's at this point in time, it's become...
Dissipated?
It's become...
I drove around Monday. Jet shirts everywhere. Excitement. Talking about it. Yesterday? And you're a peep.
They're going to talk about this. We got to go. We're right up against the break, and I want to talk about this.
After
our interview with Martin Cash. They talk about this ticket drive that's going to come next after the announcement. Why does Winnipeg need a ticket drive? Why doesn't Florida need a ticket drive?
That's right. Good point.
Florida, where they average 2,000 television viewers
a
game.
How much are they charging for those tickets in these ticket drives?
Not a penny.
Can I bring a Manitoba license and get a free ticket to the Jets games next year?
You can get a you'd be laughed out of the box.
Can I ride my bike to the game and get it? These are true facts. This is no lie.
Yeah, you ride your bike to the game in Atlanta, in Florida, you get a free ticket.
And dear
you show
God,
your Florida driver's license, you get
God,
a free ticket.
If it's a conditional ticket drive, and the owners will be, now that would be contrary to Brunt's report. Brunt's report is that the owners, the Board of Governors approved this months ago. The other reports we're getting is that, I'm not sure if it's conditional because nobody's really specified, but a conditional ticket drive before, I mean, a conditional ticket drive that would then be voted, the owners would vote on, so they'd base their vote on the ticket drive, that's insulting.
It is insulting. It's very insulting.
You don't think Chipman and company have done their market research? It's like the whole point in Michael Trako's article about the IKEA. They've done their market research. These aren't idiots. These guys didn't make money by being idiots.
The ticket drive itself would be the most insulting of all of them, I think, in my opinion.
And one more thing. I'm going around, but one more thing. The report said Atlanta, if some ownership in Atlanta comes into the picture now, do you think that Mark Chipman has been invested in this for so long that ownership from Atlanta could pop in and steal the team at this point? You think he's invested money in lawyers and research and all that stuff, that somebody in Atlanta could still steal this team? No. It's not happening. The team is coming here. Just announce it already.
Yeah, it is true. Richie is completely right. The team is coming here,
and now we're
being treated through denials and all this rhetoric and conjecture. At this point, it's enough already. And hopefully, the announcement does come Tuesday, because I want to say I think I'm going to go on the record, 100% true. That press conference was scheduled for Tuesday, and they changed it. I believe that was the case.
And why do you think that?
Spite.
Yeah.
Spite. Is he really that petty? I mean, obviously, look, don't answer that question. Just leave it at that. Is he really that petty? Let's go to break. When we come back, Martin Cash of the Winnipeg Free Press about some of the economics around this move. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. A couple minutes past 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290. Yes, Richard?
Calm down a bit.
You're better?
A little bit.
Okay, you got to splash some water on your face there. You're getting a little bit red
in
the face. I
still got more in me for later in the show,
okay,
I got
to
tell you.
Keep it there. Keep it there. That's where we like to see it. My name is Drew Mundell. I'm the host of this program, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is the operating the R desk. Go join him at www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're thrilled to welcome to the program now business reporter and columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press, Martin Cash. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning. We wanted to bring you on to talk about sort of some of the business impact and how this whole supposed return of the NHL to Winnipeg will impact on the city of Winnipeg and the economy and everything else along those lines. And we figured we'd reach out to you. You're the best guy for that job. So hopefully you'll bear with us as we get through these questions here. Martin, first of all, let's talk about, there's a lot made of the impact that an NHL team will have. Oh, it'll be the catalyst for downtown rejuvenation. It'll rejuvenate Portage Avenue. Is there any truth that a NHL team will have this effect on downtown and all
Portage
Avenue?
That's a great question. Hey, we've all been kind of musing about that for a long time, haven't we? Since the Jets left. You know, there's different opinions on that. But the point is, in Winnipeg, plenty of work has already been done, to do the development around the arena. You know, Center Venture has been created some number of years ago. You know, North Portage Development Corp owns properties on Portage Avenue. And the fact is that region on the north side of Portage Avenue has been a real problem area for a long time. So now, on the eve of the Jets returning, there is also, the culmination of a big development project right across the street. And, of course, the Chipman family's real estate development company, Longboat Properties, is an integral part of that project, on the northwest corner, Portage and Donald, up to Ellis and Hargrave. That whole block is about to have a redevelopment project that's you know, that's just getting near the final stages of completion. You know, at the same time, on Donald Street, you know, right across the road again from the arena, the Metropolitan Theater has had a redevelopment project, you know, in the works for many, many, many years. That too may very well be on the verge of completion. You know, there's also been studies done over the years. I was talking to a U of W economics prof named Phil Sorin the other day, who's done some work in this area. And generally speaking, the actual sort of global economic impact of a professional sports franchise may not necessarily be huge, but there's you know, the expectations that it creates. You know, really does sort of you know, create dynamic and momentum. You know, that may not very well be quantifiable, but is undeniable.
In terms of, you know, quantifying the value of a team moving back here and the effect of it, Martin, can you talk a bit about which businesses stand to benefit the most from a return of the National Hockey League to Winnipeg?
You know, that question specifically may be the hardest to analyze at this point. One of the things this guy Sorin says is that, you know, that generally speaking, there's a multiplier effect, you know, for any kind of economic activity. You know, you spend money at a store, and the people who own the store and who work at the store then spend money on other things, and then they spend money on other things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the money that will be spent at the, you know, attending Jets games, you know, will mostly come internally from within the community. And the multiplier effect, Sorin suggests, you know, might be a little dampened by the fact that the, you know, the million-dollar players aren't necessarily spending all their salaries here in the community. But as we say, you know, the businesses around the arena ought to benefit definitely. There's rumors that a boutique hotel is going to be built across the street from the arena. The bars and restaurants around the area can't help but benefit from, you know, 15,000 people congregating 40 times a year. They have to benefit from that, and I don't think there's any denying that. You know, there's going to be 25, 30 new millionaires in town. You know, there's plenty of real estate agents in town who, you know, and high-end properties in the city who, you know, probably expect there to be a good bump in the demand element of those kind of properties.
Martin, you mentioned Center Venture. Can you talk about SHED, which stands for Sports Hospitality and Entertainment District, and how that's going to basically aid the development of Portage Avenue, which you spoke about earlier?
Yeah. See, that again, that's another thing that's been in the works for many years now. Just, you know, there's a lot of effort has been spent trying to figure out how to redevelop the downtown, which has been, you know, hollowed out to a great degree. And so, you know, there has been some innovations in these issues about, they call them tax increment financing. And this SHED idea wouldn't necessarily, I don't think it puts money in the developer's pockets, but what it does is it commits to spending additional tax revenue that the city would generate by having new developments in the area. It would spend that additional tax revenue right in that area. So, you know, there's plenty of streetscaping and you know, niceties that could be you know, that could be built in the downtown area, you know, to make it that much more appealing and attractive to the idea of an entertainment district. So, you know, whereas now, you know, the north side of Portage, they're empty buildings that have been empty now for decades. You know, will now maybe over time benefit from, you know, from new tenants for one thing, and you know, and much better sort of street level amenities.
Martin, I just hope that the Dollarama stays there.
You're a fan of the Dollarama, are you? Way to go, man.
Nothing's a dollar. It's always over a dollar. Anyway,
yeah, no kidding.
That's the irony. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Martin Cash. He's a business reporter and columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press. Now, Martin, in today's Globe and Mail, there's a fascinating article by Roy McGregor in which he sort of profiles Jim Silver. Jim Silver is best remembered as being the head of the Thin Ice Group back in 1995, who championed the fact that the economics of Winnipeg at the time Winnipeg couldn't afford the NHL based on its economics in the mid-90s. What has changed in Winnipeg that now makes the return of the NHL a distinct possibility?
You know, great question. Unfortunately, I haven't seen the McGregor piece, but, you know, I am familiar with Jim Silver, and I know him, and, you know, he's a smart guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think it's a great observation and study on, you know, on the sort of historic development of an urban situation. I mean, Winnipeg has changed. The world has changed. You know, I think one of the things that, irrespective of the NHL coming back, the fact that that MTS Center was built amidst as much, concern and, speculation about how it wouldn't succeed, the fact that it was built and it has succeeded, you know, I think it bodes very well for, you know, the next step working as well, you know, the successful sort of support of an NHL franchise. I think it also shows, you know, a maturation of, in this city and the economy in this city and the perception of the city. In the 90s, I like to say there wasn't a damn thing built in this town in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we all remember, you know, real estate values in this city didn't go anywhere in the 90s. It was basically flat. You bought a house, you know, in 1990, you'd be lucky to get, 2 or 3% more for it 10 years later. That's changed now. There's a lot of depth to the economic strength of this community. Yes, it's not over the top, and no, there's really nothing that will make it a fast growing boom town. There really isn't any of the elements that could do that. But what it does have is stability. And the 90s actually weren't great for any of the Canadian economies. Maybe we might have suffered a little bit more. You know, also, you know, the departure of the Jets in the 90s, the departure of an NHL franchise anytime is like a large enterprise leaving the city, like a large corporation, shutting down and moving away. So, that will always have a deleterious effect. Conversely, and on the other side of the coin, when such a thing does move into town, there is requisite, energy that's created. And that sort of expectation issue, that's important for the dynamics of an economy. I mean, hell, entrepreneurs, are subject to sort of emotional reactions as well. So, if they were concerned about spending money on something, they might be less concerned about that now.
With the NHL coming back, Martin, obviously there's a need for corporate support. Do you have any fear that, after the bloom is off the rose and in a number of years, the corporate support will possibly dwindle?
You know, that's a good question, and I think, it will be, it'll be something that'll have to be considered. You know, one of the things I think about is that, the ownership of True North, in particular the Chipman family, they've been dealing with thrifty Winnipeg consumers for many, many, many years. Yeah. They don't own however many, a dozen, car dealerships because they don't know how to, deal with the Winnipeg consumers. They probably know better than anybody. There will be professional marketing that will be required to keep this thing going. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I do think that, there's a lot of excitement, and I think the Winnipeg corporate community will step up right away because, like the rest of us guys, I mean, there's many hockey fans out there among that corporate mm-hmm. community. So, I think there will be, that sort of level of excitement. And, yeah, the bloom might come off the rose with, you know, a bunch of losses and a bunch of years of losses. I think that will be something that will have to be dealt with. But like I say, I think that, you know, that the True North Enterprise, they've been operating an AHL franchise for many years, mm-hmm. and they have been, undertaking some slick and professional marketing, in their undertaking of that franchise. And, you know, so they have an infrastructure in place. I think they're up for that challenge. Who knows how much of a challenge it will be. I think it's a good risk for them to take. I think they can keep interest from that corporate sector over time.
Do you expect to see a correlation between the NHL returning to Winnipeg and other businesses that compete for entertainment and disposable income suffering a downturn?
We are budget conscious in Winnipeg, and for sure there's not a lot of conspicuous consumption that goes on. So folks, will have to watch their spending, and we don't know how much the tickets are going to be, and it's going to be way pricier than it was in the previous incarnation of the NHL. Dynamic, hey, is that really there's not going to be like tons of people coming from elsewhere to go to the games. There will be people from from southern Manitoba, from the rest of the province, maybe Saskatchewan, Northwest Ontario, and maybe it will be the case that that spending in those communities may suffer. Whereas the Winnipeg economy may very well get an incremental bump from the NHL in town, there may very well be a negative correlation. Who knows how extreme outside the city. So maybe there's that will occur. It's true. That is the thing about an NHL franchise and NHL games. It's mostly going to be the patrons will be from within the community. So they're spending money there, and they're not spending money somewhere else. Well, that has to play itself out, I think.
Sure. Martin Cash, business reporter, business columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press, we thank you very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, guys. Love the show. It was fun talking to you.
Appreciate the time. Thank you very much, Martin. Thank you. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Really good perspective.
Just
really
great insight.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, great insight onto sort of the economics and the business impact it's going to have on Winnipeg.
We evaluate so many other perspectives. That perspective is vital in terms of the overall scheme of things. And I thought that was a great insight into a number of factors. People don't think about all those factors.
Well, the spinoff. It's all everything. They say the direct benefit and then the indirect benefit. And I think the indirect benefit is even is so large that we can't fully function. First of all, look, you know what they need to do on Portage Avenue first and foremost?
What's that?
You get people down there, that's great. You get people down there 40 nights a year plus all the MTS concerts and everything else. You need to put a cop on every damn corner there. People are only going to go somewhere where they feel safe.
That's a New York theory.
They cleaned up New York.
Absolutely, I agree, Drew.
People will only go where they feel safe, no matter what else is going on. You don't want them. You want the street traffic. Now, it's going to be hard having street traffic in the middle of winter. We know that. But you want them going to the businesses and everything else in that area after they're done or before they're done.
That stuff.
Yeah. But they have to feel safe. And the only way to feel safe is to get rid of the vagrants and the element that makes people feel unsafe. And if it requires putting a cop on every corner, that's what you got to do.
Drew, do you feel safe right now?
In this studio?
Do you feel safe?
No, you're a little close to me, I got to be honest. But other than that, downtown, they need to make people feel safe, first and foremost.
We could really be seeing a significantly different downtown within the next few months.
I think, I want to say something. I've lived here my entire life. I feel safe downtown. I think people that don't feel safe downtown need to leave the suburbs every once in a while.
It's not the case, Ezzy.
I agree with Drew here that they have to feel safe. A woman has to feel safe walking there by herself at night.
Yeah.
A guy has to feel safe walking there by himself at night. People have to feel safe.
Well, Ezzy,
you're built like a truck.
Yeah.
You're 210 pounds and you're like,
nothing stops me from going downtown. But there's been plenty of nights where I've been downtown, even during the day sometimes, and I look around and I'm like, this is a little bit sketchy. and you don't want – and you people – if people think – if I think – you know, that it's a little bit sketchy. I can't imagine with a woman walking by herself, yep. an older man walking by himself, anybody walking by themselves in a slightly sketchy area are going to think twice about it.
And we're going long here. We went long with the interview. We're going long. But, Ezzy, like, you were at Red River, okay?
Yep.
And they have a safe walk program.
Yep.
Especially taken advantage of by women.
Yep.
Why is that in place?
To make them feel safe.
So I mean, there's
and I don't think it's the exchange as much as it is as it and U of W has a safe walk program.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the point is, they wouldn't be in place if it wasn't necessary.
I don't think it's necessary as it's not the exchange district. I know that. But to me, Portage Avenue, which is the main thoroughfare in your city, if you don't feel safe walking down your main thoroughfare, that's where you really need to invest some community resources. And but you need people
and
to feel safe.
One thing that
feet on the street.
There is the cop angle. The other angle, of course, is bringing more people makes people feel more safe.
Of course, safety in numbers, but you know, at some point in time, it has to be a combination of the both. Let's go to break. We'll have a quick segment when we come back, and then Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. 10:25 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Martin Cash, business reporter slash columnist for the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program or any of the interviews, they will be available on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. Get the program sent to your iPod each and every week automatically. You can always follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And remember to continually check out www.illegalcurve.com. Michael Remus is over there right now operating the R desk. And throughout each and every day, multiple times per day, we have our relocation news segment, which is updated by Dave Manuk of the Illegal Curve online team. And he updates that, I bet you, 12, 14, 15 times a day. Just doing a fabulous job over there. So remember, www.illegalcurve.com. 204-780-1290, 780-1290. We want to hear from you. We've got a few minutes before we're going to get Bob Murdoch, head coach, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets on the air. Ezzy, you're pointing at me.
Yeah, can I jump in? We got an email from a listener. Can we talk about the whole ticket?
I want to talk about that a little bit later on.
Okay.
I want to talk about that.
They're good questions, and we have some answers. And
I don't even know how many answers. Frankly, I don't know how many answers we have, but I believe Joe from Winnipeg who emailed it to us, list the questions, and they're all very valid and everything else. And I assume True North has all the details. They're just waiting for the go-ahead to be able to release it. And hopefully, we're hoping.
There's some people that think the season tickets are going to sell out quickly.
I believe.
Some people believe
they will.
So
do you not think they will?
I think they're going to have no trouble selling if their goal is let's say 12. I think they could probably sell 12,000.
I think the goal will be more. Generally speaking, I think they keep about 10% for single game ticket sales, because you know season tickets will go on sale.
That's immediately.
Let's say June 1st, season tickets will go on sale.
Yeah.
They won't put single game seats on sale until maybe August 1st. I'm just throwing out dates now.
Sure.
And they generally like to, I think, hold back about 1,500, 10%. So that'd be about 1,500 seats for single game ticket sales. That's generally the rule of thumb. But who knows how accurate that'll prove to be? You know, for those people who want to go to a game but can only afford to go to, you know, one game a year, two games a year. And there's going to be plenty of those people.
These tickets are not cheap.
There'll be student tickets too. There will be student tickets. I know that in my experience in Ottawa. Yeah. One of my favorite stories in Ottawa, my roommate called me up one day and said, the Habs are playing the Sens in 2 weeks. I want to go buy tickets. Because it was a Habs-Sens games, tickets were more expensive. So he bought
the arena so far away.
He bought the tickets ahead of time and he paid $90 a ticket.
Okay.
The afternoon of that game, there were about 300 tickets left. I got an email from the Sens ticket office saying, first 300, you know, 300 tickets available. Tickets were $30 each. My seats were better than his.
But Drew, let's just be honest here.
Yeah.
At that time,
I was not a student.
Were you a student?
I was not a student by any stretch of the imagination. But that's not my fault.
Oh,
that's
Drew.
That's certainly not.
You're violating.
I'm not violating anything.
Code.
If I had to prove a student card, I would not have been able to purchase the tickets. But it was. I was able to buy them online and print them online. So there was no. I take no responsibility there for anything. I feel no guilt whatsoever. That's what I have to say to that effect. You know, it looks like we have a caller. Let's take this one caller quickly before we get to Bob Murdoch. On line one, we have Dave in Southdale. Dave, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks a lot. You guys got a great show. Appreciate you taking my call.
Appreciate those compliments.
I got a quick question for you. He was talking about 12,000 season tickets. Now, I'm all for the return, but one of the great concerns is are people going to buy tickets? I mean, mm-hmm. the Jets sold 4,000 or 5,000 season tickets. Why do you think it's going to triple?
Well, I mean, that answer is difficult to answer, and a little bit of it is wishful thinking on my part, Dave.
Okay.
But I think that I think the appetite for the NHL has increased. I think if you look at when True North has brought the NHL exhibition games here, they've been very well attended. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I think it was over 10,000-11,000, and that's
consistently. You're right. I mean, I think they even drew one near sellout when the Leafs were in town. You're right.
Yeah. And I think the big thing is, David, they need. I think the city knows they need to buy season tickets. Yeah. Otherwise, this won't work again. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a certain amount of urgency. In respect to how long this team, you know, can last if they don't have the support with season tickets. Now, I think what you'll see is people used to always team up to buy season tickets, but more so now people will say, we want to support the team, we want to go to the games. Hey, you, me, and a friend, let's get two tickets, and we'll each take 14 games.
Yeah, people will split the season tickets and everything along those lines, definitely. I also think the dynamics of the NHL have changed. Richard and I were discussing this before the show today. You know, you look back into the mid-90s, you look at, you know, markets like Calgary and Edmonton, which we often compare ourselves to, and they were struggling, but it was also not standard that every single NHL game in every single Canadian city was a sellout.
And I think a lot of that's attributable to the media, you know, Twitter and Facebook, but also the sports specialty channels, TSN, Sportsnet, The Score, CBC. The coverage is almost double what it was.
It's probably even more so. It's just an intense scrutiny and coverage of the game. So it's always, so people want to buy, people need, know that they need to buy tickets in order to make sure that they see their favorite players and support the team. Cause that's what the league demands now in terms of fan attendance is a strong commitment.
I'm on the mailing list of both the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. And I know, especially near the end of the season, I received a lot of emails saying half-price singles going on sale. So Edmonton does work hard at filling their building.
Yep.
Calgary, the same thing, too. Sometimes on game days, you get 200 tickets released. So, and to your point a little while ago, it's going to take some slick marketing. And I think that it's the True North people are geniuses when it comes to when that thing. I mean, you know, to fill 8,800 people for a lot of Moose games and open the deck for a lot of Moose games, and you're watching non-heated rivalties like us versus Binghamton or something like Rochester, like our hated rivals in Hamilton or something.
Exactly. Appreciate the call very much. Quickly, before we go to break and bring on Bob Murdoch, it's like an airline ticket. It's like a seat on an airplane. If nobody sits in that seat, when the plane takes off, it's lost income.
Right.
It's lost revenue for the airline.
Right.
So if there's 200 seats left for a game and it's an hour before the game, the team will discount those tickets to ensure that they get some revenue for that seat so it's not wasted. And then, you know, if that person only pays $30 for the seat as opposed to $80, they might spend another $50 at the jet shop or at the at the concessions, and that's all just more revenue. So you want to get them in the building at whatever price you can in order so that the spinoffs are all to their benefit.
Drew, quickly,
let's go to break. No, Ezzy, we got to go to break. Let's go to break. When we come back, Bob Murdoch, former head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.